Chapter 17. The Red Scimitars. Fabius cursed as the corridor shook. Hull plates buckled, vomiting sparking power conduits and torn power cables. Pressure hoses burst, filling the corridor with streams of stinging coolant vapor. The renegade space marines plunged through the billowing cloud without pause, followed more slowly by the mutants and new men loping in their wake. It felt as if the Vesalius were coming apart at the seams, though he knew the frigate was far more durable than that. It had survived worse in its time. But it only took one mistake, one moment of inattention, to lose a duel such as this. Void war was a tricky thing, even for those experienced in its subtleties, which Fabius was not. He'd left it to Wolver, trusting in the creature's skill and the Vesalius's savagery to see them through. But the enemy weren't content to merely fling death across the void. No, they wanted to deliver it by hand, eye to eye and blade to blade. Reports of hull breaches echoed through the vox frequency as he hurried through the corridors.
"Ursus claws," he muttered. "Only a lunatic would use those things. Is that what our descendants have been reduced to? Barbarous fools, impervious to common sense."
He glared about him, seeking agreement.
"There is a reason Angron was the only one to mount those things on his ships."
"Nonetheless, they have their uses, Chief Apothecary," Arian said from his elbow. The World Eater was but a step behind him, moving swiftly. Fabius laughed.
"So they do, but they have never had to contend with a ship like this, or with a mind like mine. I have prepared for an eventuality such as this, Arian."
"Is that why we're going to the Wraithbone Grove, rather than seeking to repel borders?" Arian asked. There was a faint undercurrent of disappointment in the World Eater's voice. It had been some time since Arian had been allowed to indulge his baser instincts. Violence was the release valve that allowed the apothecary to maintain his otherwise impressive equilibrium.
"Yes, we have no time to waste shedding the blood of these pale shadows of past glories. Better to rid ourselves of them now and deal with the survivors at our leisure."
Fabius glanced at the other apothecary.
"You'll enjoy that, I trust."
"Most assuredly, Chief Apothecary."
Ramos and his cacophony were on full alert when Fabius arrived. Noise marines prowled the access corridors, weapons whining like eager hounds. Ramos nodded in greeting and said,
"It is agitated."
"Good," Fabius said. "Then it is more likely to do as I ask."
He pushed past the noise marine and plunged into the garden. The Wraithbone seemed to draw back from him, as if it knew his purpose. Here, the sounds of battle were muffled. He fancied that even if the ship were destroyed, this chamber would survive, intact and unharmed. Key, as ever, awaited him at the garden's heart. The Eldar was twitching and moaning softly, as if it could feel every impact on the ship's hull. Perhaps it could. Key was one with the Wraithbone in ways even he did not fully understand. And the Wraithbone had permeated the ship, becoming one with it. He knelt before the Eldar.
"There is no time for niceties. You can feel them, can't you, digging into the ship's metal flesh? Barbs of iron, venting invasive vermin into the hollow places."
Fabius gripped Key's narrow skull gently, forcing the Eldar to face him.
"You will expel them, Key. Set the Wraithbone to its purpose. Eject the barbs that slow us, and repair the breaches. Do as you were made to do. Protect the Vesalius."
Key gave a low, animal moan. Fabius's grip tightened.
"Do it," he murmured.
His battleplate chimed a warning as it registered a spike in several, all but undetectable, frequencies. Key's mouth opened as if it were about to sing or scream, but no sound emerged. The Wraithbone set in its eye sockets trembled with internal reverberations, and the simian slaves of the noise marines began to screech and yowl amid the tangled branches above. A signal was being sent. Satisfied, he made to release the creature, but it grabbed his wrist.
"Father,"
Key whispered. Fabius froze. He knew that voice as surely as he knew his own. Key gripped his wrist tightly with more strength than it had ever possessed.
Melusine.
Key opened its mouth wide, wider than it should have been able. In the hollow of its throat, something squirmed. Fabius tried to jerk his wrist free, but the Eldar held on. It reached up, catching hold of the back of his head with its other hand. He staggered back, and Key came with him, mouth still stretching wider and wider as something pushed itself out from within. Wraithbone, he realized. Dozens of impossibly fluid tendrils of wraithbone. A moment later, Fabius howled as the tendrils pierced the flesh of his face, and then he was somewhere else, lost in the past, watching old failures happen again. The mice kept dying, again and again. No matter how hard he worked to perfect them, they died. And he could not understand why. Why did they die? Some flaw in his methodology, some weakness in them. What was the answer? The old man was no help.
They die because all things die, boy. You play a good game, but games always end, and someone must lose.
I can perfect them. I know I can, he said, looking up at the tall, stooped figure. They were somewhere. Was it home or somewhere else? He could not say. He heard voices murmuring as if at a great distance, but could not see their owners. He looked down at his hands, human hands, unsullied by the touch of European genesmiths.
Can you? Or is that what you tell yourself, because you do not want the game to end?
The old man leaned forward, cybernetic fingers clicking as he prodded one of the twitching mice where it was pinned to Fabius's dissection board. His face was wrong somehow, like a mask that was about to slip, revealing the true face beneath.
There is no shame in being a gamesman, boy, in playing the odds. But one day the odds will not be in your favour, and what then?
Then I will start again. The old man laughed, and something behind his face twitched, as if there were a second secret smile there behind the first.
And how many times will you start over?
His words were echoed, as if by a chorus. Shapes drew close, watching, whispering among themselves. He tried to discern their identity, but they slipped away from the limits of his vision with taunting ease.
Until I get it right! Until my work is done!
But the words sounded like a lie, even as he spoke them. They were bitter on his tongue, like ashes. How many times had he spoken those words? How many times had he sought to bury his own failures in a grave of new beginnings?
Why do they keep dying?
Because you keep changing them. You keep teasing the beast flesh, boy, cutting away at this bit, adding to that bit, like a painter at his easel. You're trying to capture an image which does not, cannot exist, save in your head.
The old man reached up, as if to adjust his face. For a moment, Fabius glimpsed what was beneath the mask. He turned away, his soul gone cold. This was a dream, not a memory. This was the only rational explanation. He tried to will himself awake, but the dream held firm.
No, it is both, Father. A dream, a memory, a prophecy, all in one.
A new voice intruded on his vision, slicing through the dull haze of memory, a voice at once soft and harsh. He made to turn, but strong hands gripped him, holding him in place.
Now is not a time for eyes, Father, but ears. Enemies gather before you, and fiends stalk behind. You must hold firm, or risk destruction.
Melusine.
Fulgrim loves you, Father. He has said so often. He loves you best, for in you the soul of the Legion is manifest. You seek the most elusive prey, and are never satisfied.
That may be. But I do not love him,
Fabius croaked.
I do not need his love. I do not need any of them. I will complete my work, whatever obstacles they set in my path.
You misunderstand, Father. You do not see the forest for the trees.
Speak plainly, or be gone.
I do, but you refuse to hear, and that is why they love you. There are none so blind as those who will not see. A pale finger pointed.
The mice were gone. In their place, human bodies writhed, slit open and pinned to his board. To his eyes, they were unfinished, imperfect. He could improve them, make them stronger, more resistant to pain. They had to be perfect. Once they were perfect, he could stop. He reached for his scalpel. His eyes snapped open. The dream faded to nothing. Key released him as the tendrils of Wraithbone retracted.
"The boarding torpedoes," he whispered.
Key nodded silently, and he stepped back. His face was bleeding from multiple small wounds.
"Chief Apothecary?" Arian asked.
He held his blade, as if he had been preparing to cut away the Wraithbone. Thankfully, he hadn't attempted it. Fabius shuddered slightly, wondering what sort of damage that might have caused.
"I'm fine, Arian. It was nothing."
He waved aside his assistant's concerns. Whatever the purpose of Melusine's message, it had been for him alone.
"The boarding torpedoes are being expelled, but some of our guests will yet remain."
Arian nodded in understanding.
"I will see to their removal." "I want one alive, Arian. It has been almost 1,000 years since I last had the opportunity to examine what the Imperium has made of our legacy, and I am eager to reacquaint myself with the Emperor's handiwork."
Arian nodded again, turned and loped out of the garden, growling orders into his vox. Fabius looked at Key. The experience had been as unnerving as it had been unexpected. He stroked the Eldar's cheek as it gazed at him blankly.
"What were you trying to tell me?" he murmured.
In the shadows of the Wraithbone, there was a sound like a sigh. Fabius turned, but saw nothing. Annoyed, he stood.
"Whatever it was, it makes no difference. Play your games by all means, child. I will not be swayed from my purpose."
His voice echoed strangely in the grove.
"I will persist," he said.
Then more softly,
"I must."
Alkanex parried the blow, guiding the sword point into the hull plating. Sparks burst from the point of contact. Before the crimson-armored space marine could recover, Alkanex buried the tip of his blade into the black seal between his opponent's helm and gorget. Blood burst from the wound as he twisted the blade, severing bone and muscle. As he jerked the sword free, the warrior's head came with it.
"A fine blow, brother,"
Palos roared. His axe rose and fell like a woodsman's, separating red limbs from twitching bodies. The last of their opponents succumbed to their wounds.
"They make good hunting, these whelps."
He shuddered slightly as the endorphin pumps in his armor went to work.
"Yes, good hunting."
Alkanex shook his head and handed his sword to Palos.
"For a given value of good."
He sank to his haunches and pried the head of his opponent out of its helm. Then, with careful movements, he peeled the dead warrior's scalp from its skull. Once such a thing wouldn't have occurred to him, especially during a battle, but it had become second nature now. A warrior was judged on his victories, and if one was to be found worthy, one needed to keep a proper tally. He stared down the smoke-filled corridor, a song in his heart. Here, now, in this moment, he was satisfied. Other scalps slapped wetly against his hip, torn from the heads of those who sought to take what he'd already claimed. And more would be added before the end. He rose to his feet and reclaimed his sword with bloody fingers.
"Keep moving!"
Palos and the rest of his warriors fanned out behind him, some peeling off into side corridors without a word. They didn't need him to tell them what needed doing. It was as instinctive as breathing. They were all veterans of the Legion Wars, their skills shaped to a killing edge by thousands of boarding actions and orbital drops. Combat squads of 2 to 3 warriors would move to the designated choke points and bolster the efforts of the Vesalius's crew in repelling boarders. Merix was leading the remains of the 12th millennial in similar actions on the lower decks. Their enemies had not got far from the breach points, as if the ship itself were resisting their efforts to penetrate its internal defences. Thus far, they had been contained to the outer tiers of the ship. Alkanek suspected that state of affairs would change rapidly if Fabius failed in whatever scheme he was implementing. Mutants clad in ill-fitting void suits flooded past him as they reached a transit point, hooting and gibbering as they surged towards the next bulkhead. Many of them chanted the Manflayer's name as they loped into battle. Alkanex felt a flush of frustration at that. Such creatures were only fit for chattel or sport, but they absorbed the firepower of the enemy well enough, as they showed a moment later. Bolt rounds painted the corridor red, and the mutants fell screaming.
"More prey!" Palos growled.
"Let's hope these prove to be more sport than the last."
Alkanex didn't slow, and he crushed the wounded beneath his tread. His warriors moved up around him, bolt guns raised. They fired into the smoke and flame ahead, picking their targets with disciplined care. Red armored shapes sought what cover there was to be had in the corridor ahead. The passageway was wide and lined by pipelines and conduit bundles. Lumens flickered amid the smoke of the boarding torpedo's arrival. The deck plating was bent and crumpled outwards from the corridor frame in places, and the floor plates were bent and broken. Exposed power cables dangled, dripping sparks into puddles of spreading petrochem and lubricant. These were the source of the flames that crackled throughout the corridor, filling the air with heat and smoke. The environmental controls for this stretch had been damaged, and the artificial gravity fluctuated suddenly. Alkanex's battle plate compensated automatically, but the surviving mutants weren't so lucky. Several of them were caught out by the enemy as they floated helplessly. One or two were drawn screaming through the narrow aperture between the torn edge of the hull and the disembarkation ramp of the boarding torpedo. The Emperor's children advanced through the shoal of floating corpses, firing as they went. Alkanex led the way, eager to get to grips with his next opponent. He wished to add a few more scalps to his bundle. They had such fine hair, these warriors. His slaves could make something beautiful from it. Crimson forms moved forward to meet them. No disciplined defenders here, but aggressive raiders. Alkanex smiled as he spotted the leader, an older mark of armor, red, save for the places where it was marked with lines of illegible script etched into it. The sword he carried was curved and marked with more script, as if it and its wielder were stories given form. Alkanex slid forward, aided by the lack of gravity, blade raised. Their weapons connected with a ringing shriek, metal against metal. Alkanex moved swiftly, but his opponent was equally quick. Their blades met again and again. Wherever the one went, the other was waiting. The swords intertwined for a brief moment, like long-separated lovers, and Alkanex hissed as his opponent matched him, strength to strength.
"I am Arzaces, Saha of the..."
The space marine began, his voice boosted by the emitters on his helmet. Alkanex laughed. They always liked to announce themselves, these children. As if by shouting their names, they might make victory certain.
"I know who you are," he shouted. "You are a shadow of great warriors past, a mongrel made out of battlefield leavings. Do not sully this moment by pretending to have a name that is worth remembering, because I surely will not come tomorrow."
The loyalist laughed. A moment later, one of his hands sprang from the hilt of his sword, and he drove a piston-like punch into the side of Alkanex's helm. Alkanex's visor feed sputtered for a moment, and he staggered off balance. Their swords broke apart with a wail, and then his foe drove a boot into his side, driving Alkanex against the corridor wall. Quicker than he thought, the red-armored Arzaces was on him, slashing. Alkanex staggered back, and back again, the edges of the hole in the hull scraping the paintwork from his battleplate. His opponent fought like a dervish, as if his every limb were a weapon, not just the blade in his hand, but his elbows, knees, feet, even his head. Alkanex's boots crunched on broken hull particles, and the void clawed at him from behind. Slowly, steadily, he was being driven back towards the aperture. Frustration bubbled up, and he launched a terse thrust, trying to buy some breathing room. His opponent floated backwards, out of reach. Angrily, Alkanex shoved himself forward. But his opponent was ready. He pivoted, and a knee shot upwards, catching Alkanex in the midsection. He rolled back, and a second blow struck his head. He dropped to the deck for a moment, skull ringing. A kick caught him in the chest, and he was tumbling backwards into the narrow hole the boarding torpedo had made, out towards the dark between the stars. He caught hold of a heat-warped shard of hull plating, stopping himself from hurtling out into the void. The edges of it scraped against him. The hole was wider than his shoulders, but not by much. A red bullet shot towards him, blade extended. The hull plate bent and snapped as his foe slammed into him. A moment later, they were both scraping along the outer hull, torn away from one another by the force of their own momentum.
Flavius!
Palos's voice echoed down the vox frequency. Alkanex responded to his second-in-command as he clambered to his feet, his boots maglocking to the surface of the hull.
Still alive, old friend. See to the battle. I'll be back shortly.
Frost crept across his armor as he straightened. His armor's gyroscopic stabilizers activated, and his auto-sensors automatically compensated for his new surroundings. The outer hull of the ship resembled the grounds of a cathedral, overgrown with a forest of sensory apparatus and signal amplification dishes. Past the crenellated battlements, he spied the lengths of high-tension cable that connected the two ships across the immensity which separated them. At the end of each cable, a boarding torpedo burrowed into the Vesalius's hide like a tick seeking blood. Fabius had claimed that he had a way of ridding the ship of the intruders, but so far they didn't seem to be going anywhere. A warning rune flashed across his visual feed, and he looked around to see his opponent stalking towards him. The space marine raised his blade in silent salute.
A sideways duel amidst a void battle, Alkanex muttered. These wretches were insane. It was as if, knowing themselves inferior to previous generations, they sought absolution in a grandiose death.
Punctures of light tore at the hull some distance away as the enemy vessel spat fire across a vast distance. The hull shuddered beneath him, and the Vesalius's defensive batteries roared, and the glare of them momentarily blotted the red-armored warrior from sight. The warrior was on him a moment later, power blade slashing. Alkanex responded in kind, parrying when he could, avoiding when he had to. He could not hear the ring of metal against metal, but he could feel every blow. It was disorientating, fighting like this. He felt the cold heat of the stars beating down on him, though he knew it was impossible. Like the eyes of the gods themselves, watching him at their work. The rhythm of combat was broken suddenly. Something bright slashed across his vision. His opponent whirled as if in surprise. Alkanex did not hesitate. He drove forward, blade leaping out. He felt the impact in his shoulders. His blow sent Azarces's head tumbling away from the hull. His body remained where it stood, pinned to the hull by the mag clamps in his boots. Blood trailed from the neck stump, making strange shapes as it floated away in rippling globules. Alkanex mourned the loss of the warrior's scalp, even as he wondered what had distracted him. He turned as the deck shuddered beneath his feet. Something was happening. One by one, the boarding torpedoes were being forced from their entry points. The hull around them squirmed like living flesh as each tube of metal was expelled and sent hurtling away into the void. Red figures floated, caught in the rush of ejection. He laughed harshly, enjoying their predicament. His laughter stuttered to a halt as he caught sight of strands of pallid matter stretching anemone-like across the wounds in the ship's hull. It was as if it were healing itself somehow. A thrill of repulsion shot through him as he realized that it could only be Wraithbone, and he hurried back towards the hole he'd been knocked through. He didn't want to be trapped on the wrong side of the hull when the breach sealed itself. Savona shrieked in joy as her maul slammed down against a crimson helmet, crumpling ceramite and the enhanced skull within. She twisted, driving a hoof into a second attacker's hip, dislocating it. He staggered, and she caught him a looping blow. She leapt on him as he fell and smashed her maul into his chest plate with both hands. He struggled futilely against her as she battered him into a bleeding mass. When he fell, limp, she drew her combat blade and began to pry open his shattered armor. She could practically smell the untainted gene seed within him, a true delicacy in these austere times. It had been a century or more since she had tasted one, untouched by the warp. As she set to extricating her prize, bolt guns thundered around her, filling the corridor with sound and fury. Purple battle plate crashed against red in a savage melee. She gave it little thought. The battle would not be won or lost here. This was nothing more than a skirmish. Already, the intruders were falling back to more defensible positions. Let them go. She had what she wanted. As she freed the pulpy mass of gene meat from the ruptured body, she caught sight of Merix moving through a nearby hatch. He was rasping orders to the warriors behind him. Her warriors.
"Octavian, take 4 warriors and head to the next choke point," Merix said. "Belophus, I want bulkheads AA-627 and AA-629 sealed."
He spoke briskly, all sign of his normal languor forgotten. Here, at this moment, he was the consummate professional. A leader. A sudden surge of fury drove her hand down to the bolt pistol on her hip. One shot. That was all she needed. Just one. The pistol was in her hand, even as the thought crossed her mind. Just one shot, and Merix would no longer be a problem. He'd been useful for a while, but now he was a liability. Once he was dead, she would be the last of the Joybound. She would salvage something from this farce, even if the Manflayer had no intention of doing so. She caught Belophus's eye. He twitched his head, but she ignored his warning. She pulled the trigger. The deck shuddered violently as she did so, throwing off her aim at the last moment. Merrick spun around as the shot tore a groove across his shoulder plate. He saw her, his eyes widening. She cursed and rose, forgetting the gene seed, forgetting everything save the need to finish him off. Before she got more than 2 paces, however, the deck shuddered again. Bodies stumbled in the crowded confines of the corridor. Something was happening. The whole vessel was twisting and heaving as if it were in agony. Then Belophus was there, pushing her back down a side corridor. "Bad timing, my lady," he murmured, ignoring her curses. "Such impatience does none of us any favours. He'll be on his guard now, if he wasn't before."
"Why did you stop me?"
she snarled. "The field is not in our favour, my lady. Look, see." He gestured behind him. Over his shoulder, she watched as the boarding torpedo that acted as the centre of the assault shuddered its way free of its position, as if something were plucking it loose. Strands of pallid, feathery wraithbone bristled about the edges of the hull. The pale filaments pressed against the intruding mechanism and, slowly but surely, began to work it loose from its position. A moment later, it was gone, and the air howled past her as it was drawn out into the void. Bodies tumbled past her as the rupture began to seal itself. "The chief apothecary's doing," Belophus said.
"It doesn't matter."
She shook her head, seeking Merrick's, but there was no sign of him.
"He's gone! Fool! You let him get away!"
She struck Belophus in the chest, knocking him back against the hull. He laughed.
"You'll just have to kill him later, my lady. Denial makes pleasure all the sweeter."
As the breach sealed itself, the red-armoured warriors who remained began to fall back, attempting to consolidate their forces. She grinned and hefted her maul, forgetting all about Merix. They could run all they liked. There was nowhere for them to go.
"Maybe so, but a bit of indulgence never went amiss."
Arian strode through the carnage, the vents of his helmet open. He inhaled the bouquet of slaughter and let it wash through him, dampening the fire within. But only for a moment. Only ever for a moment. He could feel the thrum of the frigate's engines through the deck and knew that they were once again moving at full speed. They would outpace their pursuer soon enough and leave the sting of its weapons batteries behind. But that didn't mean the fight was over just yet. Pictfeeds jostled for space across the interior of his visor. Across the ship, mutants swarmed over the invaders, pulling them down through sheer weight of numbers. They died in the doing so, but once the crimson-armored space marines were down, tangled in the dying, it was a simple enough matter for the waiting Glandhounds to disable them. He watched in satisfaction as special blades, reinforced and driven by augmented muscle, pierced seals and joints, crippling the space marines long enough for armor-stabbing rounds to punch through helmets. A dozen mutants died for every warrior who fell thus, but there were hundreds more where they came from. As Arian watched, slowly, surely, the invaders were driven back to the now sealed breach points and contained. With extraction impossible, they sold their lives dearly, painting the corridors red in the blood of mutant and traitor space marine alike. Throughout the ship, the story was the same as he cycled through the feeds. Again and again, they made their stands and paid the price, even as the Vesalius began to pull away from the pursuing cruiser. It wasn't battle anymore. Now it was to be a slaughter.
"And we both know Khorne loves a slaughter, eh, brother?"
Arian ignored Breas and glanced at one of the hulking overseers who marched stolidly alongside him. "Activate the pain implants." The overseers were a special caste of mutant, bred for combat and implanted with stim pumps and subdermal armor. They wore crude plate, fashioned from deck plating, melted and hammered into shape, and carried a variety of weapons, as well as a control node. At Arian's command, they activated the nodes, sending a signal to the receptors implanted in the skulls of the flesh chattel they herded before them. These were the lowest of the low, things with no bones, or too many, barely bipedal, and with only a dim sentience. Walking collections of tumours and screaming masses with no true shape.
"Worthless meat," Breas muttered.
"Quiet, brother," Arian whispered, tapping the skull. "They have their purpose, as do we all."
The chattel filled the air with their screams and whimpers, often attacking one another in their pathetic eagerness to rend and tear something, anything. Only violence made the pain go away.
"A touch of the familiar, that, eh, dog brother?"
"Just a touch," Arian murmured.
Each of the debased creatures wore a cowl of cortical implants, much like those he himself bore, though far more crude in form and function. He knew, because he'd designed them himself. Pain was the only way to control such creatures. They were too dull-witted for anything else. Once activated by the overseers, the pain implants would fire until the flesh chattel reached the enemy, compelling them to hurl themselves into battle as quickly as possible. It was a brutally efficient way of overwhelming enemy positions, and Arian had put it to good use on more than one occasion. Boltafire cascaded down the corridor, punching through the flesh chattel. Many fell, but the rest pressed on, crawling across their fellows to fling themselves at their prey. The Space Marines were forced to contract their lines in the tight corridors and fall back as the tide of howling meat pressed them. Arian counted the moments, giving the flesh chattel enough time to make an opening. Then, with a low growl, he darted forward. He drew his phalanx blades as he moved, and the ghosts of his brothers howled in excitement, Breas the loudest as ever. He burst through the heaving wall of mutant flesh and struggling Space Marines and scanned the corridor. Breacher squads defended the entry point, huddled behind a shrinking wall of ablative shields, as their brothers tried to free themselves from the mutants crawling over them. The World-Eater sprang forward, blades scything out. He hacked into a shield and hauled himself atop it, crushing its wielder backwards. A bolt gun roared, and he reversed his blades, driving them down through the lenses of his enemy's helmet. He wrenched the blades loose and spun, raking them across another Space Marine's side, widening the gap in the wall. The squalling chattel took advantage, squeezing behind the shields and clawing at their wielders. What was once an organized defense dissolved into a confused melee.
"Hold fast! Die well, O you sons of kings!"
The roar carried easily over the clamor of battle. Arian sought its origin. The Space Marine was lean and clad in battle plate that was marked with little in the way of insignia or heraldry, save for the lines of poetic script delicately etched into many of the flat plains. There were so many of these lines that his armour was almost solid black in places. A horsehair crest rose above his helm, and he fired a gilded bolt pistol, picking off mutants with undeniable precision.
"I smell a high rider," Breas growled. "Look at him, dancing about with that toothpick of his. Take his skull, dog brother."
Arion bulled towards his target. The warrior turned, but not quickly enough. Arion was on him in an instant, phalanx blades biting into crimson ceramite. The space marine roared and brought the butt of his bolt pistol down on Arian's head, staggering him. Arian's blade whipped out, driving his opponent back. The warrior backed away, firing. Arion absorbed the impacts, trusting in his armor. A blade chopped down, hacking through the barrel of the pistol. The warrior stumbled back against a jagged section of hull plate, casting the ruined weapon aside. Arion paced after him, grinning tightly beneath his helmet. He could feel the nails biting, and the ghosts of his brothers clustered about him, whispering their encouragement.
"The red path calls, brother. Do you hear its song?"
"I hear nothing," Arion said aloud.
He shook his head, trying to cast aside their voices.
"Only the fading murmurs of fools and monsters."
His opponent drew the curved sword from its horsehair sheath on his side.
"Are you mad?"
he asked as he extended it.
"Is that why you talk to yourself?"
"I am talking to the dead," Arion said, tapping one of his skulls.
His opponent nodded, as if that made sense.
"Ah, do they bid you join them?"
"They are not choosy."
Arion sheathed one of his blades. He extended the other.
"I am Apothecary Arion of the 12th Legion."
Behind him, mutants howled and died, and dragged warriors he might once have considered brothers down into death with them. He felt the faintest flicker of regret, not for their deaths, but merely the manner of them.
"I am Khazra, Sheehan of the Red Scimitars. I will weave your name into my death poem when this day is done, Arion of the 12th.
The Space Marine spoke harshly, with an air of ritual resignation. Here was a warrior who knew the value of things. Arion inclined his head.
"I applaud the sentiment, Khazra of the Red Scimitars."
It was a ridiculous exchange amid the carnage, but welcome for all that. Too often the niceties were sacrificed in the name of expedience. War was his art, and art must be indulged, lest it turn to madness. He lunged, and their blades connected with a harsh scream of steel. It felt good to fight this way, to meet a foe on equal footing, the deck slick with blood beneath their feet, and only the cold stars glimmering on the other side of the breach to witness the dance. Khazra spoke as they fought.
"I have heard stories of you lost ones, passed down from the honored ancients in their sarcophagi."
Their blades became entangled, and the red scimitar pressed Arion back.
"How you danced on the razor's edge, until at last you slipped and spilled your souls into the dragon's mouth. Are you one of them in truth, or do you simply wear their heraldry?"
"I wear the heraldry I have always worn," Arion said.
"Why do you lost ones cling so hard to that which you discarded?"
Khazra ripped his sword free and stepped back.
"You are like children, I think, frightened of your own misdeeds, seeking sanctuary in better days."
"Possibly. If so, we are not alone in that."
Arion lunged, and they spun again in a brutal dance, matching each other blow for blow. He was reminded of his confrontation with Alkanex. This was a better dance by far, a purer one. But Khazra fought with the exuberance of one already dead, and that made him sloppy. He parried a savage blow and stumbled back, momentarily off balance.
"Careful, dog brother, she is watching,"
one of his brothers murmured.
"Who?"
he demanded, knowing even as he did so that he shouldn't. The dead were always trying to distract him. They held a grudge, especially Breas.
"Her,"
his brothers whispered. He thought it nothing more than a shadow on his visual feed at first. He blinked, trying to identify the lean shape that danced and spun across his vision. There, but not. It wavered, shrinking and billowing like a shadow caught in a strobe as it moved through the battle. Something about it had hooked his attention, preventing him from looking away. He fought on instinct, blocking and parrying with all the grace of an automaton.
"He must be held to his path."
The vox pulsed with the sing-song lilt, a feminine voice. Arian shook his head, trying to clear it. Was the figure moving closer or getting further away? It was impossible to tell. His armor's orspec showed nothing at all. He hesitated and nearly lost a hand to Khazra's blade. He stepped back, putting distance between himself and his opponent. Fear was not in him, but he knew better than to listen to unfamiliar voices murmuring in his ear. 1,000 years in hell taught even the dullest student valuable lessons, and swiftly.
"The path, the path, the path. He must be held to the path, or all is lost."
The shape continued to dance and leap. Then, in the blink of an eye, it was gone. As it faded, he saw Khazra lunge. Arian jerked aside at the last moment. The blade sliced through a cable on his helm, leaving himself open to a blow that bisected the servos in his right greave. He staggered. Arian, head ringing, slid aside and deftly sliced through a knot of power cables. Khazra cursed as the weight of dead armor sought to drag him down. Another blow severed his armor connection to its power plant. The space marine tried to rise regardless. Targeting runes flickered across the inside of Arian's helmet, isolating a weak point in Khazra's backplate. Arian flipped the phalanx blade around and drove it down with every iota of strength he possessed, piercing the ceramite and puncturing the flesh within. The blade jutted against augmented bone, severing the spinal column and crippling his opponent. Arian set a boot against Khazra's helmet and levered his blade loose.
"A good fight," he said, though he doubted the warrior could hear him. "Good enough that I am sorry for what comes next, Khazra of the Red Scimitars."